The next matter is In Re Interest of Chance. Counsel?
Good morning, Your Honor. Mr. Police Court.
Good morning.
Patrick and Daniel on behalf of the appellants in the matter of In Re Interest of Chance. We have filed this appeal. Obviously, the reasons set forth in our brief. And the record is very clear. The facts are very strong. This father was unaware. Father of the child. The parties were married in Omaha in 2002. They relocated to Kentucky in 2004. They separated in June or July of 2005, which was around the time of conception, and had no contact with each other again until mother delivered this child in Stockton, California in April of 2006. Father found out about the birth, the imminent birth, by C-section 3 or 4 days before the birth, and that's when he found out his wife was expecting. The record is very clear that the wife and husband separated because she was prostituting herself and she was using drugs. My client made efforts to find out if it was his child by traveling across country to Stockton, California, and happened to be present at the time of the birth of the child. And the record is very clear and uncontroverted that at the time of the birth, the normal congratulatory atmosphere wasn't there. There was awe and shock and awkwardness in that delivery room. And that it was very clear to him after the child was presented why. Because the child was born Caucasian. My client, as the record indicates, is black. And the child was born with red hair and blue eyes. The mother indicated, and again it's uncontroverted, this was a Trix baby. The client was not placed on the birth certificate, and from that point forward, had every reasonable expectation of proceeding as though this child was not his child. He did not make efforts to have a genetic test made at that time. That was the last contact he had with the mother, and he did not know about the proceedings pending in the district in the juvenile court of Douglas County until February 1 of 08. A letter was issued to him, and he responded within 2 weeks. And he made repeated phone calls to the caseworker, and then made repeated trips to Omaha to attend to the proceedings of his wife, and then of himself, and participated fully and completely, and requested a court order for a home study, requested genetic testing to determine he was the biological father, and proceeded from the moment that he found out that he was the biological father in every appropriate regard. The facts, as I observed them, appear to be identical or nearly identical to the case that was decided, I believe, by this same panel in the interest of Dylan. And I think it's very clear that he had just cause to believe that he wasn't the biological father. A reasonable person in that position would have done, would have thought no less. I think he could be faulted for not requesting a genetic test, but I don't think it rises to the level of clear and convincing evidence that he knew he was the father and acted imprudently. Further, the state made no reasonable efforts, did not make sufficient reasonable efforts to locate this father. One letter was sent by certified mail to 3 separate addresses by the initial assessment worker, and that mailing occurred in June, I believe, 2007. And no further efforts were sent in terms of mailing him notice until the February 1st letter of 2008 to which he replied. Not one single letter. The record does say that...
Excuse me, did he respond to the June 4th, 2007 letter?
Never received it, Your Honor. It was sent by certified mail, thankfully, and the record clearly reflects that it was never signed for, the state did not have the green card, the return card, and it was not returned. But he did receive the February 1st, one of the February 1st letters, and he responded immediately. So in the 6 months immediately preceding the filing of the petition, there was no contact with the biological father. The second caseworker indicated she made phone calls, I believe she said 5, to to a phone number that she was given by her mother, whose rights of attorney. But none of those phone calls made contact with the father. There was no voicemail and no indication that it was actually his phone. And when he did make contact with that worker in February of 2008, he gave her the correct number. And from then on, there was not a problem with communication. He is, was at the time, 41 years of age. He worked with mentally handicapped individuals in the state of Kentucky. And that was his current position. And the previous position, he did the same thing. And before that, he was a business owner. He was a painter. And the record also clears he served his country in the United States Navy. This is not a father who should be deprived of his right to care for and parent his child. And ever since he was given notice, he's done everything that we could ask him to do to put himself in that position. I think it would be a tragedy if the father was not allowed to parent the child. There's no showing he's not a good parent. There's no showing he did anything wrong. He's separated from his wife under appropriate circumstances. And I think it's very clear that given the circumstances, we would ask you to remand and reverse this and allow him to parent. I understand.
Excuse me. What is to say that you believe that the father, the evidence shows that the father had reasonable knowledge to believe that he might be the father of this child?
February 2008 was the letter that he received. And he had.
Within 2 weeks of that letter, he had contacted his partner.
Yes, sir.
And when was the genetic testing arranged?
Genetic testing was arranged at his expense in April 2008.
Petition was determined it was filed
February 14th, which was coincidentally on the same day he called. He could not have known that there was proceeding.
So, under the case law, we look at whether he had the intent to abandon in the 6 months preceding February 14th, 2008?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And I think it's interesting, the caseworker, she could not say that she had made any contact or she had left a message or she had sent a letter in that 6 months. And the trial court made a determination, I believe it was in paragraph 10 of his order from August of 2008, that he found my client credible on all of his testimony, and less credible with respect to phone calls with the mother. I don't think that's pertinent or telling with respect to his intent, because there was an indication from the very mother's mouth that he heard that he wasn't the proper child. So whether or not he was more or less credible if she had called him during that 6 month period of time, I don't think that's the issue. She had already told him he wasn't the proper. I'll reserve the rest of the morning, unless you have more questions.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Carolyn Curry, and on behalf of the Douglas County Attorney's Office, I represent the state of Nebraska, the appellee in this case. After reviewing this case using a de novo standard, this court should affirm the decision of the juvenile court, because the juvenile court was correct in finding that the appellant's parental rights should be terminated pursuant to Nebraska Revised Statute 43-292, subsections 1, 2, and 9, and additionally that termination was in the minor child's best interest. The state is required to prove by clear and convincing evidence that at least one of the subsections of that statute has been satisfied. If the state does prove that at least one of those sections is satisfied, then this court does not need to consider the sufficiency of the evidence under any other subsection. In this case, the state did prove, by clear and convincing evidence, that not only one but three of the subsections of that statute were proved in addition to the best interest of the minor child. First, under subsection 1, the appellant had abandoned the minor child for 6 months or more prior to the filing of the petition. As opposing counsel mentioned, the petition for termination of parental rights in this case was filed on February 14, 2008. That petition alleged that the appellant intentionally withheld his presence as well as his care, love, protection, maintenance, and parental affection. Three witnesses confirmed during the hearing for termination in their testimony that the appellant had never sent any cards, letters, gifts, or financial support for his child during those 6 months prior to the petition.
Ms. Curry, let's back up if we could. Starting on August 14, 2007, what evidence is there that he knew or should have known that this was his child?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe there are three reasons that the appellant should have known or was on notice that he was Chance's father. First, the appellant and Mrs. Jackson were married, not only at the time of Chance's conception, but also at the time of Chance's birth. Nebraska Revised Statute 42.377 states that children born in a married relationship are determined to be legitimate unless otherwise decreed by law. Additionally, the testimony or declaration of a husband or wife is not competent to bastardize a child born during wedlock. Secondly, the appellant in this case was present at Chance's birth. He had firsthand knowledge. If he didn't think there were any chance that he were the father of his own wife's child, he never would have driven from Bowling Green, Kentucky, all the way to California to be present for the birth.
This isn't, the problem I have with your answer is what you're talking about is a legal presumption that he's the father because he's married. And what's really at issue in an abandonment case, as I understand the law, it's not the legal status between a child and an alleged parent, but that parent's intent to abandon. And I'm having trouble understanding how one could have the intent to abandon a child if that parent doesn't know or isn't on reasonable notice that he's the father.
Yes, Your Honor. In response to that, I would offer that Mrs. Kircher, the caseworker assigned to this case, was present during a supervised visit that took place between Chance and his mother, Mrs. Jackson, on June 4th, 2007. During that supervised visit, Mrs. Jackson was on the phone with the appellant, at which time she told the appellant, "I am having a supervised visit with your son. He was placed in foster care."
That's enough, given her previous statement to him that it's a Trix child and apparently obvious physical discrepancies that would indicate to this African-American man that this child was not fathered by him.
Well, Your Honor, I understand your point, and I would argue in response to that this appellant was on notice. They were in a relationship, obviously a sexual relationship, at the time when Chance was conceived and also when Chance was born. The mere fact that the child was born of a different race should not warrant that a parent is allowed to abandon the child until someone comes along and says, "Let's do a DNA test to prove otherwise."
Even in a circumstance where the wife is working as a prostitute and tells her husband this is a Trix child?
Well, in response to that, I would look to subsection 2 of the statute where the parent substantially neglected the child, where in that event, the appellant states that he thought anyone who was left in Miranda's care, the mother, Mrs. Jackson's care, would have concerned him, but yet he allowed the child to leave the hospital with Miranda. He left him there, knowing that she had been prostituting herself, knowing that she was abusing drugs. But he didn't think that this was his problem because the child was born white and with red hair. Additionally, Your Honors, I would look to subsection 9, where we look to the aggravated circumstances of abandonment. This is not just abandonment for 6 months prior to the filing of the petition. This is abandonment from the day that Chance was born white and with red hair. And additionally, when we look to the best interest of the minor child in determining termination of parental rights, that is primary to concern of the court. In the instant case, the evidence in support of subsections 1, 2, and 9 is highly relevant in determining whether terminating the appellant's rights was in the minor child's best interest. The evidence in this case shows that the appellant lacked parental maturity to provide the necessary parental care and protection for his child. How did the parent lack the parental maturity? Well, in multiple ways. First off, Chance was abandoned because of the color of his skin and a statement by the mother. Well, it was his child. And the appellant expects this abandonment to be forgiven because, as he testified himself in the termination hearing, now that DNA has proven Chance to be his son, the color of his skin and the color of his hair doesn't bother him anymore. Well, the minor child should not be suspended in foster care to await an uncertain future. Chance was only 1 year old when he was placed into foster care. Since then, he's been able to give a stable, permanent love and affection, education, speech development, occupational and physical therapy development that he's needed. And most importantly, the caseworker's opinion in this case, based on her training, education, and experience with this family, is that it was in the minor child's best interest for the appellant's parental rights to be terminated. She based this on four different factors. First, the appellant's presence at Chance's birth. Second, the appellant's knowledge of Chance's birth. Third, the appellant's continuous marriage to Chance's mother. And lastly, the appellant's failure to do anything, ask for any visitation, or to feed his child until 4 months after the termination for parental rights had been filed. Therefore, the appellant's rights should be terminated because there was clear and convincing evidence to establish that 43.292 subsections 1, 2, and 9 had been satisfied and that termination was in the minor child's best interest. Thus, the state respectfully requests this court affirm the decision of the separate juvenile court for Douglas County, Nebraska. Thank you.
Counsel, can you tell me what you think the record reflects as to when the father actually became aware of the fact that this was his son?
I would argue that in addition to having at least some indication that this would have been his child at the birth, regardless of the child, the color of the child's skin, that during the phone call with Mrs. Kircher, Mrs. Jackson indicated to the appellant that she was having a visit with their son. That there was obviously a familial connection between Chance Jackson and the appellant on the phone with Mrs. Jackson. That took place on June 4th, 2007.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions? How much time does the appellant have left? Counsel.
Your Honor, I think it's important to note that the conversation that counsel references in June 4th, 2007, Ms. Kirshner also indicated in her testimony that she had no way of knowing whether my client was using the phone. She didn't confirm that.
No way of, I'm sorry.
She did not know and could not say whether my client was even on the phone. There is no indication other than what she says she heard the mother say to someone on the phone. There was no indication my client was on the phone. She did not pick up the phone. She did not talk to my client. She did not dial the phone. Record does not indicate how she would have known my client was on the phone, other than what the mother said.
So this is testimony from a third party as to what they heard the mother say to someone.
Yes. And aside from being born Caucasian with red hair, this child had blue eyes, and it clearly wasn't his intent to do anything other than find out what was happening. He drove across country to find out. And then when he received the letter in February of 08, he responds promptly. He asks for visitation. He drives up here for visitation. It's supposed to be arranged, and the department worker, it's never set up. And she doesn't respond to her voicemail, so the record's clear. She was in trial that day and came back and checked her messages and never called my client back. She sat in Omaha for 2 days and then drove back to Kentucky at 7 o'clock at night on the 23rd of July. Never been given a chance to visit his child. The only thing that they did, as far as reasonable efforts, was ask him to take a drug test. That's also in the record. But Judge Daniels did not order drug testing. Why she thought she had the prerogative to order to compel that, I don't know. But that was one of her conditions when he got to Omaha, was to take a drug test. And set up. I would also add that he raised three children to adulthood. That's also correct.
Thank you very much. Matters deemed submitted and counsel are excused.